Welcome to Diaries of a Data Scientist, our podcast in which we share about what's important to break into data science, provide valuable insights also for senior data scientists, and invite interesting guests from different data science areas. We're Yasmin and Kate, we're both data scientists and mentors working in industry, and we are sharing here our thoughts and experiences. Let's go!
Hi guys, this is Yasmin and Kate from Diaries of a Data Scientist, and today we're going to have our 13th episode. And I would propose to start this one by telling you one story or live experiment that I recently did on LinkedIn. So pretty much I have uploaded 2 AI created pictures on LinkedIn posts and asked my community to guess which one is AI created and justify the answer. And the outcomes of that experiment was pretty interesting. I mean, like, I wouldn't say that I wouldn't expect it, this kind of result, but it was pretty interesting to see that only 25% out of people that commented and justified actually nailed this this game and actually guessed that those are 2 artificially created pictures and also was able to justify why. Also, what was pretty interesting is that I have checked the LinkedIn accounts of those people, and all of them are experts in data science. They're like either leading AI data science projects or working as, engineers or data scientists. So that was pretty interesting.
Only the experts did get your question right.
Not all of them were experts. And only 25% of experts did my question right.
Interesting.
Can you imagine that?
They're like, you know, you have to say you did not ask, justify, yeah, okay. Right? But the question was rather,
it was a little bit also
which
psychological.
One... Exactly. Yes. So many people just naturally, yes. By the way, you posed the question, which was also the challenge, uh-huh. Right? Uh-huh. Assume one needs to be real.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I didn't say that it should be real, to be very precise. I just made a question, which one? I said, is it artificial or real? Yeah. And which one? So definitely like a little bit of psychological effect in there that people were forced to think in kind of very restrictive box. But anyway, the outcomes are pretty interesting. And I guess that is why the topic of today is, how do we understand which one is real right now?
Yeah, so how to know what's going on, right? And how to, mm-hmm. to still be able to discern reality from fake generated content.
Yeah. And I guess this is also not a surprising fact, at least this is what I can see within the company and with people that I'm talking with, that people can be intimidated by this fact that they cannot distinguish anymore between AI created content and the real text or the real images. And this might also have an impact on the people behavior or how they actually assess the information.
Yeah. And to be clear, this is not just going on in the area of imaging, right? Of images, mm-hmm. and videos, but it's also, of course, AI generated text, audio, mm-hmm. Any kind of other medium. But I think in today's episode, we're going to focus on the 2 domains of text and imaging and videos.
And we're going just to talk today about 4 different chapters of our story. The first chapter is what is going on in real life with the examples and different scientific articles. The second chapter is going to be about technical possibilities and how we can actually technically detect AI-created images and content. Then the third chapter is going to be about the consequences, right?
Yes, exactly. The consequences on society, consequences, mm-hmm. on maybe also the areas of education, scientific
kids.
Writing, and so on. Youth, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. And the last part is what we can do as, you know, individuals in order to detect it, even though that we don't have maybe those models at hand and we're not fancy, data scientists to create those models.
How to survive in the age of AI?
Yeah, definitely. And how can you distinguish just being a normal person and working in business? This
exactly.
is what it's going
so
to
we,
be about.
We can increase the rate from 25% to 95%.
I really hope so. Maybe that would be even possible. So,
and how did you feel about the images that you've created, Kate? So I know we both tested some AI portray or headshot generators. So how did you feel about the results?
So what I would say definitely is it's a little bit overpriced, to my opinion, because I had to pay 39 euros in order to have 80 pictures. Those 80 pictures were from different backgrounds. I had an option to choose from three different backgrounds, mm-hmm. as also that I would have three different styles. But what I would say is that the ending result is that I would just take only one picture that I can actually post as a professional one, that I can post on LinkedIn, that I can post on headers and so on. So I would say that for the experiment, that was pretty interesting, but I would still prefer going for the professional photo shooting.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it was the same experience. So I've tested this other company, right? It was named Profile Bakery. It's based in Switzerland. And like it was the same, 60 images and maybe five out of them are, you know, usable, but only then in a lower resolution, because, you know, as soon as you go deeper in, you can clearly see some artifacts and things that are a little bit weird. Yeah. And they even stated in their own email, right? So with the email which they presented the results, they basically said, okay, don't expect that every image is great, maybe two or three are going to be usable. So they already, you know, had expectation management in their own email. I paid $30 for it. Mm-hmm. And I must say, like, most trouble the models had with the eye area. So I think a nose, mouth was looking pretty good. So, and I think this is quite telling because, I mean, that's also how humans are communicating a lot through the eyes, right? And this is how many people are also detecting other... distinguish other human faces, right? And this is the part where I think artifacts are most visible.
Visible.
Mm-hmm. And the second part was the ratio between head to eye-generated body. I must say, almost 100% of the images, the head was looking way too big for the body they've put it on. So it looked a little bit like a balloon head, you know?
Yeah, I understand. So, just one quick question out of curiosity. Did they ask you that you would have to provide several pictures of your head and the body?
They asked between 6 and 15 pictures that you had to submit, but they've basically just said, like, you know, the headshot portrait area. So I did not upload like a full body
picture
perspective exactly or picture. And I'm not sure if it would have helped. The way that I think they're kind of working, right, is that they have this kind of business buddies with the outfits. And so I don't think that it actually would have helped a lot.
Because in my case, I was asked to provide at least one picture of my like upper body and my head in order to make sure that it's going to be a nice proportion. But yeah.
Did you feel that it went better? So, so did you also observe this kind of misproportions?
Not to be very honest, I guess that was okay. But the most concerns were about my face and about like the sort of double teeth. So they would think that I'm a shark. I don't know. Also with the eyes.
Two series of teeth. Interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And also the hair. This is actually how
hair.
People on my experiment detected that it was the artificially created picture. And also maybe the last part about that topic, we have to say that they protect the data and they're going to delete your uploaded pictures, the model that created pictures for you, as well as the pictures they have created, I guess, after 30 days. So you should not be, afraid of that.
Yeah, but I must also say I'm always super cautious with this stuff, even though we're doing a lot digital. We're putting out this podcast with our voices and everything, right?
Yes.
But please, whatever service you use, read carefully through the terms of service and really read it this time, you know, not just with
contract.
Software. You download and accept, right? No, just please really read the terms of service, and if you're okay mm-hmm. with that, because it's your face and your imaging that you upload there.
Yeah, definitely. And maybe talking about the images, we can slowly go into the different examples that we do have currently in the world. You also saw different articles that I have attached to my LinkedIn post on this Friday. From the first one was actually from the University of Waterloo in the United States, where they stated that researchers found that people had more difficulty than it was expected distinguishing who is real person and who's actually artificially generated. And the outcome of that experiment was, I'm going just to read it aloud, 61% of participants could tell the difference between AI-created people and the real ones, and 85% were actually expected. So it was below the threshold.
Yeah, okay. Wow, yes, and so this means almost 40% of the participants were fooled. Yeah. By the AI generated images.
Yeah.
And so, honestly, I can't really blame them. I mean, it really depends on the quality of the images. I think you can also put a lot in, you know, the more time you put into manipulating an image, I think at some point it's gonna be very, very hard to detect it. So it's all about the quality and the resolution and maybe the context also in what you're seeing the pictures. Mm-hmm. But I think overall, we as a society need to be a little bit more critical in reviewing, to, you know, reactivate our critical thinking a little bit more and also be a little bit more suspicious about what's going on online, honestly. And this counts also very heavily for social media.
And also having such a technology, it's amazing, right?
Yeah.
You can right now create a lot of images without paying a lot to professionals, perhaps in this sense. I'm not talking about the images of your face. I'm talking about just images for posts, right, and articles.
Yeah.
And with the last update of ChatGPT, that it can create videos based on the text, it's also amazing. But I guess, as you totally correctly said, you mean that we have to be much more critical right now by looking at the different information.
Yeah, and even let's switch to another domain, right? Even in the scientific realm, where you would expect a high level of, say, sophistication and double checking, right? the service Elsevier has been quite, you know, in the spotlight because people clearly found a couple of examples there. So there was at least, I think, two papers that have been found on Elsevier that have clear LLM generated text outputs in the paper. So literally it said in that first paper I found, the first sentence of the paper's introduction basically read, "Certainly, here is a possible introduction for your topic," and then, you know, went on, and that was in the paper. So it's a telltale sign of the use of ChatGPT. And the really bad thing is, to this date, and I checked it, the paper is still online on Elsevier.
Wow.
So
okay, that is pretty interesting. Yeah. You know, I just have a question, how, because usually before you put out an article, it has to go through technical review and technical editing, but how this have happened in this case? I mean, how?
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Exactly like you said, that's actually the process which is supposed to guardrail and to, you know, quality gate the quality of the papers. But there's like peer-reviewed content and articles, and there's preprints. And many people are not able to tell the difference if they're not, you know, really in the area of academic writing. And preprints basically mean there's zero peer-reviewed process. And these is the kind of papers that you could also find, for example, you know, everyone can upload stuff on archive, for example, right? And so there's literally zero peer-review process, and that's when these things can happen. So also because human review is the most expensive part of this kind of process, right?
Of course.
Maybe also which was leading Elsevier to not human review checking all of the papers
AI
that they're
just check it, perhaps?
Yeah, that they're offering there. And interestingly, so the second paper that was found contained a phrase. It's very, very funny. I'm very sorry, but I don't have access to real-time information as I'm an AI language model. That's, yeah, again, another telltale sign. And that was in the medical domain. So the authors of that paper literally all had an MD, a doctorate in the medical domain. And this is really, can really damage the trust in the authors, but also, you know, just in the whole scientific process.
Definitely. This is what I'm thinking of, because let's say that before today's episode, I was really critical to the post that I can see or to the like random persons that put out different articles. But the scientific articles was like sort of a state of art where you can go and maybe you should not be that critical. Maybe you should not be that cautious anymore. And you can just let the authors lead you through the article explaining what they have found in there. And right now it seems to be not the case. At least you should not trust it 100% of the cases.
Yeah, you should, I think, as mentioned, peer-reviewed process, I think the quality is still holding up, right? Several different people, double-blind checking and so on. Things like that would just fall through with the first, actually, you know, other person checking that article who's not in the list of offers. And I think peer review process is still holding up, but just be able to discern the quality between peer reviewed and just preprints. And that's why also, a little bit of guidance for your own academic writing. You should only cite peer reviewed articles unless there's very high validation and likelihood that the preprint, trust the preprint. Coming to maybe a less, say, you know, critical field, LinkedIn posts. You can clearly see a lot of LinkedIn posts being supported at least by the help of LLMs and maybe likely ChatGPT, right? And sometimes to the point that you're just thinking, oh man, just turn it down a notch, right? Because if you don't give a certain style to what you're asking, you get this very enthusiastic, a lot of emojis.
And engaging content. And I guess this is what we can definitely see, because we're also using a lot of ChatGPT just to correct the tags. And sometimes we're asking, oh, if you don't feel that it's engaging, please make it engaging. And that we see that it's like this
super engaging.
Super engaging is happening.
Exactly. Right, is either you or me, we just sit down, we take the AI-generated LinkedIn post and we turn it down a notch from our side and, you know, just remove some emojis and use a little bit more common, popular terminology and words. And this is to the point that, you know, like one very, you know, I wouldn't call her influencer. She's more like acting in the area of AI, and she's also consulting with a lot of big companies. Her name is Ellie K. Miller. Go follow her on LinkedIn. She's a great person to follow there. And she and her team have created a custom GPT to basically remove all, she said, dumb words that ChatGPT uses, like love, into something.
Yeah, embracing.
Exactly.
All of this stuff, yes.
So they built this custom GPT to turn it down a notch, which is quite interesting. But you need to have a paid subscription to test it out. It's public, but you need a paid subscription to test it.
That's pretty interesting, because, you know, I just have an idea that it can be a nice use case for another package in Python for stop words removal, because we will remove the words like A, the, is, and et cetera. And right now we can add maybe something stop words ChatGPT, like AI created ones. And you would have, I do have the thumbs up from Matt right now. So, and he would remove all of those dumb words, definitely. And maybe just like talking about the tags, this is something, similar to what you just said, from a different study, that look at that, just more than half or 53% of the participants of the experiment read AI generated content and assumed that a human was involved in writing said content. So it is the majority of the participants of that experiment. All of those articles, all of those links were going definitely to put into the show notes.
As we said, right, if you just use it out of the books and you just say, give me a LinkedIn post, and you will get this very engaging, very little bit over the top style. But I mean, there's so many ways to prompt engineer basically a way more subtle output, right? And just say maybe even give an example of your own writing style, and then let LLMs adapt to that own writing style. And I mean, it really depends on how you use that tool. And I think you can 100% get outputs there that are not discernible by humans.
Definitely. Because this is what I see, for example, with my articles. I would love to be more sometimes direct, maybe sometimes a little bit more tough in some parts, and really state the situation as it is without, like, you know, sugaring this one. And the ChatGPT, unfortunately, cannot do this as of now. And maybe adding your own identity and personality to the post is much more interesting for the audience instead of writing this overhyped, amazing.
Yeah, I mean, this is supposed to be delivered and also by tools like Microsoft Copilot, Microsoft O365 Copilot, right? With the use of Outlook, and then just seeing how you maybe converse in your emails, that's going to be interesting. Mm-hmm. But just to also give some other examples, and there's so much. I mean, we could literally just talk the whole episode about this, but I don't know if you've seen it, but there's AI influencers by now. So there's actually like AI avatars, which are put out by Meta, for example, themselves, which look like literally Kylie Jenner from the Kardashian clan. And
Awesome.
They make it very clear. It's fully AI generated, and it literally looks like her. And you're supposed to be able to chat with her and tell that AI avatar about your problems. And of course, I mean, this is, you know, mainly going to be used by younger folks. Mm-hmm. And they're supposed to open up about their problems to this AI avatar. And the handle of that avatar is Your Sis Billy. So Your
and
Sister.
And it was created
Billy.
From
Meta.
That family or for Meta.
No, from basically Meta, or more popularly known than Facebook company, directly on Instagram. You can find that AI influencer. And yeah, so I mean, at least it's clearly labeled as AI avatar. So it's not like impostering Kylie Jenner.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, this can happen. And there's already influencers on there completely AI based, which make hundreds and thousands of dollars each month.
I'm just like, I'm just like really curious about the kind of the idea behind that initiation, because like, is it like kind of to receive personal coaching from those AI ever created avatars? Or
I think there's several. So as mentioned, so the usual job of influencers, like influencing different communities. Yeah. So by,
and
you could fully control the look and the personality of this AI avatar, you could reach basically different communities, right? But also monetization-wise, you ever wanted a personalized birthday message from Kylie Jenner? Here you go. You know, you could monetize on that. And
I mean, I don't have any comments. I do even have right now goosebumps, to be honest, because I still don't believe that.
And this is maybe still social media. It's on Instagram. It's maybe not that critical if there's some AI influencers influencing people to buy product XYZ, but just talking a little bit more seriously about deepfakes who are impostering and impersonating nation leaders.
Celebrities,
faking
public
adult
figures
content.
As well.
Yes, yeah. This gets really, really serious soon. Also, like, just the area of scamming people for money. You know,
definitely.
In Germany, it's very well known to have this. It's called Enkeltrick, meaning grandfather or grandparent scam. I mean, it's gonna be just
somebody is
more
calling
and more.
Them or...
Yes, the scams are getting higher quality with voice imitation. Being able to maybe even fake images that you send on WhatsApp, or it's getting really dark mirror
out of control, I would say. Yes, and I think that I mean, I'm totally sure that in Germany and perhaps like in the whole Europe, the GDPR is much more significant for the government, and that is why they're trying to protect data, to protect people from the internet and all of the coming actions. But what I'm also totally sure about is that, for example, if you're taking countries like Russia, and I know this for sure, we don't have that strong GDPR, and the information is just leaking out of your sources. Even bank can sell your personal information, and so on and so forth. And that is why they kind of got a lot of those scamming messages frequently. And I'm not talking about maybe 3 times in a year. I'm talking about maybe once in a day.
Mm-hmm.
That frequent,
yeah, so
and that
fake
often.
News and a fake media content. So that's when also a lot of times I had presentations at work, and colleagues have been asking me, but what can we do about it? So other tools, yes. Other models, like other AI models, can maybe detect this kind of fake or AI, let's say it's more broadly AI generated content.
Yes.
And yes, now coming to a little bit more technical part, I think in this episode we're going to take it a little bit more shorter, but we're going to do a extra content on just the technical
on
side
that.
Of maybe deepfake detection, AI detection, and so on.
And text detection as well, yeah.
Yes.
So what I totally understand, maybe let's a little bit hypothesize about that field. What I have heard and what I have read is that this kind of part falls right now into the classification model. So that we kind of have to classify right now, either that picture is labeled, is AI created, or that picture is real. And that also, I saw in different articles that you might use deep learning for that. And you might use, for example, natural language processing algorithms in order to detect AI generated text. Do you have like any maybe more specified algorithms like that?
I think here we really need to differentiate a little bit with the domains, because I think the process will look very different for text based versus image based. Yes, as you said, right, it's in a classification realm. But so if you just basically Google or use your favorite search engine for, you know, looking through the web and AI content detector or AI detector, you will find a couple of services and tools online. Just to name a few, no advertisement, we have not tested them. ZeroGPT, Scriber, Plagiarism Checker.
Yes.
And there's even like a custom GPT to detect GPT-based text, interestingly. And the thing with this, like some of these have free versions, but I mean, you have to pay for like
for
proper use.
Better.
So yes, you already have to, so it's the whole business model behind it. And the thing is that, you know, looking just a little bit deeper, you will find many reviews and comments about how these kind of services produce a lot of false positives, meaning people have tested, they've just written text on their own and entered it in these services, and then it's just coming up with 50% of their text is AI generated.
Yeah.
So it's creating, assumingly, a lot of false positives, and this can create huge issues because, I mean, in the education realm, many universities have been using automatic submission services like Turnitin.
Yes.
And Turnitin, for example, now has this AI detection. So, you know, students who've been really just writing on their own and
they might
submit it,
be
and
false
it comes
positive.
Up with, oh, you've been cheating.
Yes.
And this is
can
really
imagine?
Problematic. Yeah.
You are, as a student, working for 9 months for your thesis, that you would be assigned to the false positive.
Yeah, and a lot of these services maybe just also turned that AI detection up without any expectation management, without proper documentation about, you know, that there's a lot of room actually for errors. And honestly, most of these services, they're not any better than guessing. Again, it depends a lot on your style of writing. Right. As mentioned, of course, if you give it the top, not the over the top LinkedIn post AI generation, it's quite easy to spot some of these patterns. Right. But if we're talking about more academic style of writing or different styles that you can output, which is
also
got
a little bit like emotional.
Again, very, very emotional. Yeah. Which is how humans write. There's so many false positives. And honestly, I'm not really in favor of the services. I think it's, you know, you're better off with using your own critical thinking.
Better services.
And that's also why universities and many academic institutions are turning away from these services. Mm-hmm. And I actually think they should rather
supported.
Rethinking how they are posting academic assignments. So, you know, they have to change the way that the pupils and students are tested.
it's not about making sure that they don't use ChatGPT and these kind of tools. It's finding new ways of testing for their understanding, higher level, you know, challenges, and even maybe allowing the use of these tools, because this is the reality now. I think that's so the way that they should go.
Maybe they will need to a little bit restructure the process in there.
Yes.
What I wanted just to add a little bit on the top of that is I've seen a lot that different, I don't know, book agencies and magazines right now have this warning message for like writers and authors that they're not publishing Gen AI created content. And they do even have, as they are saying, yes, they do even have this AI models to detect the AI generated content by the authors. Just for the information, if any of you would love to submit the article on, let's say, O'Reilly or perhaps Kinaga, please just be careful and cautious with that as well. I'm not sure though, how is that working? Because as Yasmin, you just like correctly said, they might not be that accurate and you would have a lot of false positives. So again, just be sure about that.
Yeah.
But and how is, go ahead.
Go ahead.
How is that working with the images and videos? I just wanted to go more to the imaging part.
Yeah, I think so. With imaging and video, I would more call it like deepfake. And deepfake detection has actually been around for a couple of years, right? I mean, even before transformer models, we had generative adversarial networks, which were generating images like a different type of generative model. And I mean, basically at the same time, also the idea or the challenge is rising. Mm-hmm. How would you still be able to tell AI generated imaging and videos, maybe from real imaging and videos? So it has been around since, I think, 2017, 2018, 2019. You find a lot of content on there. And yes, there are models. And I think in the imaging realm, it's a little bit different, right? Because I mean, an image is having so much more, I would say,
complexity,
volume, yes, complexity, volume of information. And I would differentiate two kind of levels, right? Either you try to look for these weird faces, double, you know, too many fingers on one hand. So either you're looking for
teeth,
this kind of,
yes,
with when you generate humans, you know, humans are very hard to generate. So that's when usually these models are a little bit shaky, So either you look for these kind of telltale signs, or a little bit lower level, you look for repeating patterns and artifacts on pixel level. And there are models which can do that. You can train models. You can actually also train, again, like a discriminator model to differentiate, right? But what you have to see is also, I mean, you're just playing catch up with the newest technology. So, you know, new technologies coming up, the next level, like Sora from OpenAI. And now we're trying to catch up again in that area. And
with
there's a lot of money going into this research, but definitely not as much money as with the generation.
Also what I would say, not that amount of money and funding to the universities for the actual research to prevent full information as well. So I guess we have the total disproportion right now.
And even the companies which are actually in the AI field, which are producing a lot of these AI generating models, they're also interested in, you know, in finding ways and approaches and models to detect fake imaging or fake videos, right? So, for example, in 2019, there was a Kaggle challenge. I think the prize money was $100,000 or even $1 million. And it was sponsored by, you know, Amazon and Meta and
like
so on.
Huge companies.
And it was basically a deepfake detection challenge in 2019 already, working with the Loklos to differentiate between fake and real imaging. So you see, it's it's really like a long-standing challenge. And there's maybe just also, you know, for the sake of completion, there's something that's called C2PA, and it's like a metadata, like a technical standard with which publishers and companies and so on, they can embed metadata in the media, which will allow you to verify the source and the origin.
So they're checking the metadata around the pictures.
So exactly what OpenAI is now doing for example, DALL-E 3. So every picture that is generated with DALL-E 3 or via the use of ChatGPT will get this metadata. CT2PA. So with all of the pictures that are generated by their service, they will have this metadata where you can see source, you know, OpenAI generated by ChatGPT, which I think is very good. It's not solving completely the problem of provenance and a checking, but it's, I think, a very good step into that direction.
Yes. So I just want maybe to, you know, to wrap it up a little bit with the imaging part, because it's a lot of going on, definitely. And it was, as you said, since 2017, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
So can we say right now that the imaging problems, it's, let's say, not a classical standard of data science, machine learning algorithms, but maybe towards this way, because you will need to label AI created pictures by versus like real ones, and that based on those patterns, the model will be able to detect us.
I would say that the solution for many of this like kind of AI generated content will be not a technical solution at per se, like with having a model which will detect it, but rather you know, a higher level problem solving approach, like using metadata, like using certificates. Somewhat when you have your name behind the document, watermarking.
And signature perhaps as
well. And digital signature. So it's a little bit higher level problem solving, which will add overhead, which will add bureaucracy. But
of course.
I think this is how people have been also trusting different in other domains, like encryption and digital signatures. Maybe what you need in order to have a trust-based system.
Yes, that is... Yeah, I guess this is perfect. And why you can't use, let's say, the solutions on that high level with the signatures and everything what you just mentioned with the algorithms, plus as an addition, that might create a pretty nice benefit for the society.
Yeah, but in terms of definitely be
the consequences.
Yeah, be some time until we get there. So the question is, this is happening right now. This has been happening for months. I mean, it started with maybe AI-based filters on Instagram that you can't even trust any kind of video content anymore, because there's also filters that will act on videos, right? So this has been going on for some months. So what do you think are the implications on us as society?
This is what I was just thinking about right now. Well, maybe I will enter this kind of conversation about the consequences on the society of all of those amazing technologies. Is a very recent a story that I've heard from one of my friends from Russia. So that was the story, and it was a huge scandal about one of the cartoons. So the cartoon is called Masha and the Bear. And pretty much the cartoon is about a little girl that in the funny way is torturing the bear, and only animals can see that little girl. And we do have in Russia the AI smart speaker, and the actual little girl, like let's say that she's like 5 to 6 years old, she asked this AI speaker why that girl Masha from the cartoon, why she's living alone, why she does not have any parents. And I'm going to read you right now the answer of that speaker. So the answer was, she is just a ghost of a girl. That is why she doesn't grow up and only animals can see her. The parent couldn't bear the loss of their child and left, leaving the empty house. And Masha is torturing the bear because he took her life.
That sounds not safe for 5 or 6 years old.
It is not. And my body is all over the goosebumps. And that is why I guess one of the implications of that is definitely kids and young generations, young people. And that is why perhaps we definitely have to be much more cautious about the content for the kids.
Yeah, and educating like, our kids and
how to
younger folks. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I know that YouTube has this kind of option. I don't know how many years they implemented that for kids. So they do have this kind of button to show only content which is 18 plus restricted. But still, kind of in even these situations, it's not 18 plus something. This is just the story behind the cartoon.
Yeah.
The most interesting thing is that it was not on the internet. So the creators of this cartoon didn't even had this kind of meaning in this cartoon. So AI just created this kind of a meaningful story based on different, books and stories for kids.
It hallucinated, right?
It hallucinated in this very, very
weird
and black, dark way. I would put it like this.
Yeah, and as you said, right, even if you look on this YouTube child mode, let me call it like that, I mean, you see a lot of you know, very weird, animated, super colorful thing. There's a very good video, some YouTubers who actually review that and basically also say, I mean, even in this child, suitable content can damage the attention span. It can damage what young kids would reflect on as being reality. And this is a really big topic. So I think overall consequences on us as society in general, but definitely for younger kids, we need to be really, really more careful and double critical with what we consume in the media, and also asking ourselves, right, does this make sense? Is this realistic that, you know, this picture is taking in this context and so on?
And maybe off top to this, this is what I was just listening to one of the interviews yesterday evening. She's a neuroscientist, and she was talking about the problem that our brain was not actually created to assess that amount of information and to assess that critically, which is much more harder for the brain. Right now, what we have, perhaps this is just not the technology itself or people being unconscious or people being too infantile. This is also maybe the kind of biology problem that our brain, again, is just not suitable to assess that amount of information that we have nowadays.
Yeah, and I can also understand one of the most common reactions is I just don't have the time of double checking every article and finding the original sources. And in some areas, you just have to do it, you know, talking about the academic writing process, because there you really need to be careful. But I think on social media, many people are using that to relax, to unwind after a long day. And then I can also understand voices that say, I just don't have the energy or the motivation to, you know, just critically review every little thing. And but still, it's shaping the standards of maybe of AI influences of what women or what humans are looking like. And then you're like starting to question yourself, oh, should I maybe get some treatments done? And just to also be careful and mindful of why you're using the services, I think it's very important. But just in a more serious area, the implications for cybersecurity also of companies.
Of course.
They are tremendous. If you've heard about the terminology of social engineering, which is, you know, hitting the supposedly weakest link on the chain, which is the human worker in the companies. And as mentioned, voice imitation, automatic translation, it will make it way more easier to scam your way into, you know, into company boundaries. And this is very important that you know, that companies are educating their employees also about the, say, increased implications from AI on cybersecurity.
Yes, and I guess this is also the responsibility of every single company to upskill their employees, not how to program, right? We're not talking about go ahead and learn SQL or something, not. Yeah. We're just talking about being more critical, being more cautious, and maybe we would have in the future a course or a direction which is, let's say, AI literacy, because we right now have data literacy, right? Which is...
Yeah.
Tell you everything about the data, what you have to know about that. And I really hope so that maybe in the future we're going to have this kind of domain as well.
Yeah, I can tell you it's definitely a hot topic right now in the company, in the corporate space. And as mentioned, so also in the cybersecurity realm, where we're just trying to play catch up again, right? Like a new technology is coming up, which poses a new threat, and the cybersecurity research is trying to catch up. But I think from the human side, there's definitely things that we can do. And maybe it would even just help to tell people who are not as familiar with AI and data science what is possible. Because just listening to some of the examples today, maybe if you're not yet familiar with that, like you're like, oh my God, this is possible right now with AI, right? And maybe already increasing that understanding about what's happening right now will help to be a little bit more cautious with how you're treating maybe unknown callers and stuff like that. Yeah.
And everything what you can see on a social media. And just to add a little bit to this, I don't know, have you watched Social Dilemma movie from Netflix? So what I wanted just to say that already at that year, we didn't have ChatGPT, we didn't have AI even as a term at that days. And on that movie, it was already mentioned that the false information spreads 6 times faster than the true one. And can you imagine how it doubled or tripled that number nowadays, having large language models,
AI yes. content? Yes. Yeah.
So this is also one of the consequences, and this is also where we have to be very cautious about what we're reading.
Yeah, and quite naturally, we've already mentioned a couple of tips and hints of mm-hmm. what everyone from our side can do about it, what individuals can do about it, right? And I think one big topic is definitely education. So educate yourself, educate your yes. kids, your family about mm-hmm. what's possible and what kind of sources you can trust, talking about the preprint versus peer-reviewed content, for example.
Yeah.
Educating towards more critical reviewing and thinking, and as mentioned, considering, does this actually make sense right mm-hmm. now, just questioning also logics behind certain videos, and this can help a lot to also how does it disclose fake content.
Also what I can add that usually people will provide more, let's say, emotional, more realistic content. And this is also one of the advices that you can take while reading different articles. Even as we know right now, scientific articles, just pay attention if it is like rich content, if you would have different emotions in there, if it is, as you just said, is a critical one to assess.
Yeah.
And also what you've mentioned, for example, about the pictures, always check the metadata, always check the sources and see if it actually creative one, because we know that ChatGPT and any large language models, they are based on what is already in the internet, and they cannot create something which is not in there, and see if it is
unique. Except they're hallucinating, right?
Except hallucinating, yes. Yes. Do you have something else to add?
Yes. So I think be your own best AI detector. I think if you train yourself for the, say, as mentioned, it really comes down to how this kind of tooling is used. I think you can 100% use them in a way that you cannot discern it as a human. But, mm-hmm. you know, just in general, for example, for ChatGPT, if you find text that is unusually formal or very, very formal where it's actually not supposed to be, this can sometimes hint to AI generation overly complex sentence structures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, text is unnecessarily long and wordy and a lot of, you know, description, descriptive. Mm-hmm. When there's no sources added, because this is something that without further, you know, additions and design, ChatGPT will not do. It will not give you sources, right?
Mm-hmm.
Repetitive words or phrases and, you know, as mentioned, maybe overly enthusiastic and the use of a little bit weird terminology. Yes.
Honestly, I also saw that at one of the MIT articles that they would suggest if you would have too many repetitions of the same word, that you can claim that's like AI generated content. And they even provided one of the examples that if you would have, let's say, Chicago hotel 3 times, 4 times in 4 sentences, that is going to be AI generated ones.
That, or you're unfortunately a bad writer, which you can also train
typos.
Yes. And I think in the imaging, if you just look more closely at pictures, I think right now we're still having a state, especially if you're looking into more higher resolution pictures, which is still mm-hmm. a little bit of a challenge for AI generation. You can definitely see in the face, if you spot it, irregularities around maybe the eyes, you know, artifacts, and maybe the lighting that is reflected in the mm-hmm. eyes is not really matching between left yes. and right eye. Anything watching like freckles or moles, are they looking maybe off somehow? And in videos, for example, I think something which is in videos often is that sometimes uh-huh. the blinking
yes.
is not really matching the dynamics of the... Yes, it's not very natural.
Maybe also breathe. What do you think if the person is not going to breathe at all or
yes,
too much?
Yeah, there was even some research which tried to detect
uh-huh.
heart rate in the videos. Like supposedly there are small changes in color, like when your heart is beating. And yes. supposedly you can check in videos if there's like heart beating in the person, which is really fascinating.
Yeah, and I guess also maybe to the top of that, to the heart beating. I'm just you know, hypothesizing. I haven't read this, honestly, in the articles, just got an idea right away that if you are nervous, if your heart is beating really fast, which means that you're nervous, you might have sometimes like redness on the cheeks.
Yeah. Oh, you see the pulse in the neck, the right? Okay, and, yes. This goes very, very medical right now. But so looking more closely, I think there's right now at least still telltale signs of AI generated images and videos. We've mentioned some of the challenges like eyes, hair, and so on.
Yes.
That you can try to look for. So I don't want to give the impression that we're saying, oh, we should completely ban this. I don't think so, but I think it's important to be mindful in this area and also, you know, be aware of the consequences and just be a little bit cautious. Yeah,
of course. To add, so how you can detect also the text is that usually human will have typos in there. You might have typos in the letters. You might have typos with the grammar. This was also suggested by MIT to look at that specifically very closely. And that I found out LinkedIn post. Unfortunately, I don't know the author of that article, but it was a very funny picture that in a situation where you are talking with the virtual assistant and you want to check if it is an actual a human assistant or it's like I created one, you can just print hello world in Python. And can you imagine how we can answer you? Because like usually if it is connected to an open AI, you would have, yes, sure, this is the Python code and you can use this in this library. Yeah. You can also test it. If it is not going to be like that, if it is going to be a person or maybe like a smarter model, of course you will not be having that AI created content. And about maybe to add about the pictures, from my experiment, what people told me why they would suggest that picture is artificial instead of another one is because, as Yasmin said, hair, it was not really natural. Mm-hmm. That appearance was not really natural. And also the teeth, because you might have sometimes double teeth on the pictures.
All right, so now you've gotten some tips. You know, if you just keep an open eye out and keep looking for it, I'm pretty sure you find already a lot of examples on LinkedIn, on any kind of text-based forums, on social media, let it be TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, whatever, of AI-generated content, sometimes clearly labeled as such, which I commend. And I think this is what also companies, for example, should do if they put out AI-supported content, right? Just label it, make it transparent. Sometimes not, and sometimes you're even being tried to be scammed. So we hope that this episode will save you some tears and helped you to educate yourself. And if you have any comments or if you've also already tested AI generated content yourself, let us know in our interaction format on Spotify. And
as I guess on LinkedIn as well, if you would love to DM.
Yeah, and definitely. If you want to check out the two fake Kate versions, check out Kate's LinkedIn post on this. And see you until the next episode and stay cautious.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This was Diaries of a Data Scientist by Yasmin and Kate. And if you enjoyed the episode, remember to check out our YouTube channel and our LinkedIn pages for more engaging content from the data science world. Thank you for today. And seeing you in the comments.